Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Okay, before we begin and hear from our speakers today, let's go around the room, as is our tradition, and say our names. I'll go ahead and begin, if I may. My name is Roy.
My name is John.
My name is Gary.
Mike.
I'm George.
Nick.
My name is Mark.
My name is Michael.
Eric.
Michael.
Gerald.
Ralph.
Gary.
No, I'm Jerry.
Steve.
I'm Ray Dyer.
I'm Wally.
I'm Michael.
Jason.
Jack.
Doug.
My name is David.
Peter.
George.
Joe.
Roger.
I'm Shantanu.
Michael.
Michael.
I'm Carl Wolf.
I'm Kay Matsuda.
Chris Arachita.
I'm Steve.
I'm Marshall.
I'm Len.
Russell.
Dan.
Peter.
Mark.
Casey.
My name is Paige.
My name is Jeff.
My name is Brian.
I'm Oswaldo.
Jay.
Richard Adley.
Thank you. I think that's everyone. Every Sunday we have really great teachers that come through our doors, but it's always a bit more special, I would say, when it's one of our very own. And today we have two of our very own because this is part of our Dharma Duo series. And guys, don't relax too much because I have my eye on a few of you that I want to get up here one of these days. But that's a whole. We'll talk later. But it gives me great pleasure to introduce two very fine gentlemen from our Sangha. Closest to me here is John Mapplier and Gary Ost. Welcome, gentlemen.
Well, it's a pleasure to be up here, and as I was doing the meditation, just a feeling of such warmth and love was welling up, and I thought, here we go. So I laugh as much as I cry. So if I get a little verklempt, please excuse me. I had an opportunity to get to know Gary last Thursday, so we could talk a little bit before doing this. And he was very kind to invite me up to the city for lunch. And I had one of the most wonderful afternoons. Just when you just get to know somebody and you kind of share your story and about your life, and it just... That human connectedness, you know, that sometimes we lose, very important, and that was absolutely wonderful. And I think that comes up as well. My friend Roger is here, who we've been friends for a couple of years, and the theme of friendship has come up. A very good friend of mine. Passed away on Valentine's Day. We were friends for about 30 years, and I've lost many friends. But it was another sort of spiritual awakening, because at the same time that it's sad to lose somebody that you've known for so long, such a feeling of joy that I had such a good friendship, that we take the time out to get to know people, and we open our hearts and our lives, and we share stories, and there's so much to laugh about and cry about. And for me, it was, when I talk about my practice, what it always keeps coming back to that I have to remind myself is living with an open heart, and that the relationships in life, when we step out a little bit and we meet people and we open our hearts and our lives, that's ultimately my number one practice. And it's difficult because you have to take risks, and things change, but it's worth it. So it was a really good reminder for me like I said, I laugh as much as I cry. So tears of joy and tears of sorrow, but most of all, good memories. And sitting here and just seeing people in front of me, being able to meet wonderful people, it's very, very touching. I was born in Santa Monica, by the beach. We lived in Palos Verdes on a house above a cliff above the ocean till I was about 5 years old. And I remember so many things about that. I could even draw the floor plan from the house. But most of all, I remember loving being close to the ocean. And when I was about five, we moved to Darien, Connecticut, for 3 years. I was an Aryan from Darien. yes, I was. And it was a great opportunity to go into New York City. My father worked in Manhattan, so we'd take the train in and get to see, you know, real big city. And but they were both sort of bedroom communities, and my father had grown up in Palo Alto and was born there and had gone to Stanford. And my mother was born in the East Bay and went to Cal. You can imagine what big game day is like in that house. So they decided to come back to the Bay Area. My father got a job in San Francisco. And it was a really good thing because Palo Alto was a really good place for me to grow up, especially in the late 70s when the Anita Bryant thing was coming out. I knew I was gay very, very, very early age. I just knew. I knew it would never change. I just kind of had a sense that it will always be there. I hoped someday that attraction for women would grow because I wanted a family, but that never happened. So, and when the Anita Bryant thing came up, I was in a supportive environment that the things I heard were, leave them alone, let them live. Even the teachers in school and junior high school were very supportive, and that was really good. It gave me a little bit of confidence. I've had some challenges. I came out when I was in high school and then kind of went back in the closet a little bit, said just kidding, to make people more comfortable, but really came out about age 20. And I moved to Columbus, Ohio for 21 years. I met a man, I was 21, and fell in love. And it didn't last very long, but I stayed, and it was a chance to sort of live a life on my own. And in 1990, I was diagnosed HIV positive back in the time when most people didn't make it. And that was a big turning point for me because that's when faith really came into my life. It had been there before, but it was definitely a test of faith. And there have been many others. But one of my spiritual practice for me, again, is living with an open heart and having faith. And hope is very important. What I like about Buddhism is I kind of like the larger-than-life. I can be a little... And it's the idea of equanimity is very good, and the idea of bringing psychology into spirituality as well is very good. So I'm very happy to be here.
So it seems as though I was set up for Buddhism maybe 5 years ago when I retired from 35 years of being an Episcopal priest. That summer, it was the summer of 2007, my partner of 11 years and I had discovered that just by coincidence we had the exact same retirement date. So we set it up to have this marvelous month's vacation in the south of France to celebrate the fact that we were both retiring early. And the last thing I did before we got on the airplane was grab a book that I was in the middle of. It was James McGreevy's book, The Confession, the former governor of New Jersey who came out in a big way. And I found most of that book actually pretty boring because, this is somebody who really liked backroom politics and came up through the ranks in New Jersey. So I was slogging my way through, and then I got to the part of the book where he made his announcement in front of everybody. And then I read a sentence that arrested me. He said, after I made my big announcement, I went back to the governor's mansion. Nobody called. Nobody texted. Nobody sent emails. Nobody sent snail mail. I heard from nobody. And I realized, apart from what people told me, I did not know who I was. And I closed the book and I said to Bob, my partner, that's me. And I entered into a period of sort of drifting and looking. I began to explore many forms of spirituality that were new to me. One of them was Native American spirituality. And in fact, in the course of the next year, I attended a sweat lodge for the first time and was pretty much unfamiliar with what the routine was, and therefore it was news to me when the shaman stopped in between two of the rounds and said, just want to let you know that it has happened before, and I think probably it's going to happen today, that somebody's going to hear a new name during the next round. So if you hear a new name, I request that you not tell anybody. And that you just sit with it for 30 days, and if it still feels appropriate, then share with your community and ask them if they will confirm it. So it was a complete surprise to me that I heard a name. And it was very significant, the name that I heard, given that I was asked to be quiet for 30 days. The name that I heard was Listens Before He Speaks. You need to know that I used to get in trouble in school for talking all the time. So for 30 days, I practiced this this silence that was brand new. And what it produced was an alertness to being present to myself that I had never really experienced before. I had always served other people, and more important, I had always waited to hear from them how I was coming across, and maybe even who I was. So in the course of that year, while I was beginning to listen to myself and be involved in more and more spiritual things, it became obvious that my partner really was not interested in any of that. And so we did what, unfortunately, a lot of people do when it became possible for us to get married. I, for one, was motivated by the desire of fixing our relationship by getting married. So during that window of opportunity in 2008, we were one of the couples that got married. And almost immediately, our relationship began to fall apart. And before that year was up, I had been introduced to yet another spirituality. I met Michael Murphy at a Billy's gathering, and he introduced me to GBF. And the first day that I came to GBF was the second time in my life that I was... turned on by being on the floor with 50 men. The first time was the first time a friend took me to the old Western bar, Rawhide on 7th Street. And I remember walking onto the dance floor and saying, this is so hot, I've got to learn how to do this. Mm-hmm. And the day that I came here the first time, I said to myself, this is so cool. 50 gay men being quiet together. and pursuing something together that was deep and meaningful. And I said, I have to learn how to do this. So I began to meditate regularly, and I also began to read a lot. I was fortunate that I was retired. And I was fortunate to be introduced to the gay men's Buddhist reading group in the East Bay. At that time, I lived in Walnut Creek. So I got involved in weekly support in reading Buddhist books. And so I began to acquire these writers that I consider to be like my teachers. Chogyam Trungpa was one. Pema Chodron was another. She has become probably my closest teacher. I have a secret wish I could visit her. And then there were a number of other books that were very important too. In the course of that next year, 2009, I went to the LGBT retreat at Spirit Rock, and I was introduced to Irina Weissman and her book, A Beginner's Guide to Insight Meditation. And I was really grateful for something she said in the course of that week, because I tend to criticize myself for not being sure I'm getting insight meditation still. So she told a story in the course of that week that was very important to me. She said, there was an abbot of a monastery who was having an interview with a new monk, and the monk was complaining about the fact that he wasn't getting what insight meditation was all about. So the abbot said to him, well, sometimes it's more important to practice loving-kindness meditation for a while. Like, I think sometimes we should practice loving-kindness meditation and nothing but loving-kindness meditation for up to a year. You should take a break from insight meditation and just do loving-kindness meditation. And in your case, he said, you should do it for yourself only. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to give myself permission to do that too. So I began to listen to the things that I was learning from Pema Chodron in particular. And especially her teachings on Tonglen, the practice of breathing in the difficulties of our lives, which she calls our best teachers, and breathing out affirmations that are not only for ourselves, but for everybody else on the planet who is dealing with whatever you're dealing with at that moment. And that has made a huge difference in my life. So I've noticed in the course of the last couple of years, three movements, I think, in my life that are very important to me. One of them is, one of my writer teachers is David Rico, who has spoken here a number of times, who is a Buddhist and Christian psychologist, and his book, How to Be an Adult in Relationships, was a very important book for me to read, having gone through a divorce. And I began to take to heart what he talks about when he talks about the five A's that we should have gotten in our childhoods. But hardly anybody gets all of them, you know, not thoroughly. But he says, it's okay. You can give yourself the five A's, and after you get good at giving yourself the five A's, you can give the five A's to your friends. And then after you get good at giving the five A's to your friends, you can give them to a special friend, and you will begin to experience being an adult in relationships. So I began practicing sending myself, and I used this sort of as a variation of the loving-kindness practice. I began sending myself attention and acceptance and appreciation and affection. And especially for me, the important one was, the fifth one, allowance to be who I am and give myself permission to learn from my mistakes. And I can't tell you how many times when I've been sitting on my cushion it ends up being about that. So I'm very happy that I have been given the opportunity to learn something about being an adult in a relationship. And in 2010, I met a special man, Michael Embry, who's in front of me. And we've had the opportunity to, I think, lay the foundation of a relationship that for me has to do with presence and caring. So I find myself spending less time looking for how the relationship is going to go in the future and spending more time just being present. So that's one of the things that I'm happy about. Another thing that I'm happy about, I'm looking for a signal if I'm about time.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Another thing that I have noticed is the difference that the teaching about mindfulness has had in my life, and especially in one of the books that we read in the East Bay gay reading book group called Buddha's Brain by Rick Hansen. That book said a couple of things that really inspired me to be curious about the problems that I have with not knowing who I am, short of other people telling me, and believing that the stories that I have told myself about how my life has gone are, you know, like who I really am. So one of the comments that they made in that book, Rick and his co-author made in that book, was they're neuroscientists, so this is all pretty pretty significant findings, I thought. They did some research on how much of the brain lights up when subjects are given the task of thinking about the question, who are you? You would think that when we think about something as important as who are you, that 3/4 of the brain would light up. And they announced that it was like a minuscule part of the brain is involved in this question that we consider, that I consider to be, you know, the task of your life, to figure out who you are. And they said it's actually not, the brain doesn't care that much about that. And part of the reason, the brain doesn't is that it is spending so much energy just being triggered into following synaptic responses and going to all the places that we've ever gone when we have reacted to things. And they began to look at the difference that mindfulness training makes on actually changing the synaptic firings in our brains. So I thought, there's hope for me. I'm going to do this seriously. And fortunately, my therapist, Mark Peterson Estrada, uses mindfulness training in his therapy. And so I have begun to notice that I actually am changing some of the ways that my brain fires, I believe. I've noticed even in my dreams that I'm being more mindful of how reactive I am in my dreams. So I really am pleased with that. And then the third movement is following along the lines of what I reported about Pema Chodron. The time I spend on my cushion, using Tonglen, is making an enormous difference in my life. I consider the times that I sit on my cushion to be the times I am best at loving myself. And I consider the 1 or 2 times a day that I am able to do that as being like the most sane thing I do in the course of the day. And perhaps the time that I'm giving myself a hug, it's not a matter of luxury for me. I have to do that, or I would not be a happy person. And I am a happier person than I was before. So I want to commend in particular the writings of Pema Chodron to you, if you have not become familiar with her. I love it when Pema Chodron says, you know, enlightenment is about lightening up. And it has to do with seeing that you don't have to be quite so serious about whether you're making it or not, because it's not about getting better. I love it when Pema Chodron also talks about a couple of other things, which I need to refer to here in a moment. I love it when Pema Chodron keeps talking about the moment that you realize that you're suffering. She says, the moment that you realize you're suffering is one of the happiest moments of the day. Because you realize that you can start looking for the causes of your suffering and then working backwards to changing the behaviors that affect your mind states and the mind states that affect your happiness. So I'm beginning to actually do that when I will find myself in the middle of feeling sorry for myself, going suddenly, I'm suffering. Why didn't I notice? I'm suffering. And then I began working backwards and looking at the causes of my suffering. And then the third thing that I just love when Pema Chodron talks about is when she talks about the bodhicitta and this inheritance that we all have. She calls it the soft spot in the middle of our being. The vulnerable soft spot, the vulnerable, sad soft spot, she even calls it. And she says it is our connection with the entire human race. It is our connection with our love for ourselves. And it is the key to waking up to our Buddha nature. And so I love it that all of the practices of the four heavenly mind states have to do with activating the bodhicitta. And I am getting a lot out of practicing loving kindness practice and doing compassion practice and doing the sympathetic joy practice and doing the equanimity practice. And so this stuff is great. I'm very happy that I have found GBF. Thanks.
We do have time for questions. Any comments?
Gary, can I just...
Yeah, hi, Mark.
I just... could you speak a few moments about, you know, your spiritual path?
What brought me to Christianity, was being born in a home of very pious evangelical grandparents. And there was just never any question that I wouldn't be following in their steps. They had a very warm religion. And it had a lot to do with sort of treating Jesus like your best buddy. And so I got into that. I needed that, actually. In the last 5 years, I have sort of felt like I've been kicked out of the nest. And as though my buddy Jesus has been saying, you know, you're on your own now. Time to do some growing up. I don't know exactly how I feel about God right now. But one of the books we read in the East Bay reading group was Stephen Batchelor's book, Buddhism Without Beliefs. And I was so happy to read that book for two reasons. One was, he said, not only is Buddhism agnostic, but it's agnostic about agnosticism. So, you know, just keep noticing and be curious. And then the other thing he led me to believe is that Christians don't have any entitlement in the area of thinking that they are right. And what I mean by that is they have neither the entitlement to think they are right, nor the entitlement to think they're the only ones that have problems with thinking that they are right. It is a trap for all of us, and it is even a trap for Buddhists to think that now you have found it. And now that you have found it, you're getting somewhere, and should anybody rock the nest, then you need to defend it and say, you know, wait a minute, this is... I know that the rest of the people think that they are right, but this really is right.
I have a question for you. How did you find the GBF, and did you have an established, you know, meditation or Buddhist practice prior to coming here, or is this where it all began?
Yes. Actually, I had read, didn't know much about Buddhism, I'd say, but my first aha moment of exposure was in the 1980s when that movie, What's Love Got to Do with It, came out about Tina Turner's life. And Angela Bassett, you know, all the drama, and she, you know, all the drama in her life, and you show her turning to Buddhism because she was just tired of the drama. She wanted peace. And I thought, interesting, because I hadn't heard much about it. It's just funny that glimpse stayed in my mind about that. But I had been introduced to mindfulness meditation when I was working for a family in Columbus, Ohio, for 17 years. I had a job taking care of... The children called me Mrs. Doubtfire because they were really young when the movie came out. And I worked for one main family, two main families for 17 years, and kind of helped raise the kids and took care of the mansion and did everything a girl can do. But it was really good because it fulfilled my need for nurturing and wanting that family. And I got paid for it, and I don't have to pay for college, so that's not too bad. So that was fun. But during that time, in the early 90s, I found myself reading, because I love to read, but I was reading books about Buddhist psychology, about mindfulness practice, and it's interesting, when I moved back to the Bay Area, I realized that's all, a lot of it is Spirit Rock and everything. So I had been immersed in it since, I'd say, the early 90s. But I'm not part of a Buddhist group. And I was on a newsletter, Rick Isensee, the author, the gay therapist author. And I was on a newsletter, and it said he was doing a talk, and it was going to be at the Gay Buddhist Fellowship in San Francisco. And I realized I hadn't been up in a long time, so I kind of took a risk and left 2 hours early so I could figure out the parking and everything, and got up my nerve to walk in. And I came, and some people asked if I wanted to go to lunch afterwards, so I got to meet some people, and I thought, I think I'll come back next week. And I came back. So that was my...
And here you are.
Yes.
Thank you.
Can I say one more thing about God?
Sure.
Nothing's ever been said before.
Well, David Rico talks about the evolutionary arc of the human race. And he talks about it in the context of the bodhicitta. The part of Buddhism that I think inspires transcendental ism or transcendental thoughts, I think, is the bodhicitta. There's something about settling into, like, the assumption that we are going someplace. I also like the fact that in Buddhism it's measured in terms of geological time. So not only for the human race, but also for the individual, it's normal to expect it to take a long time. And it's normal even to take two steps forward and one step back. So that's not quite the same thing as what I was dedicated to for 35 years as a parish priest. But on the other hand, it is treating God more like spirit, maybe, or that I'm sure that I should use the word God, talking about the bodhicitta. But there is something about the bodhicitta that is transcendental to me. So I just want to throw that out.
And I was going to mention, one of my great passions now has been, last summer I took a class at Stanford through the continuing education called The Science of the Compassionate Mind. And I've been involved, there's something at Stanford called Seat Hair. My mom and I went to see the Dalai Lama when he came a couple of years ago to speak. And it's called the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education. And I have a huge interest in neuroscience, spirituality, consciousness, and healing, and psychology, where it all meets. And it's incredible that it all sort of comes together at Stanford. And right across the hall, I've been taking many classes. And the professors in the psychology department, many of them do yoga, practice mindful meditation. There's a wonderful spirit there. It doesn't feel, at least from what I've seen, it doesn't feel cold or clinical. And some of the professors have said that they never thought they would be able to be, you know, in front of a class talking about conducting studies on empathy, on compassion. And that's exciting to me, where it all converges, because it really is a passion of mine, and it's exciting to be a part of it, because I always wanted to be, so where it comes together.
So, Gary, do you still attend Episcopalian services?
Fortunately, most of them are on Sunday mornings, so I don't attend very many of them, actually. But I'm the Tuesday priest at the Franciscan Sisters of the Episcopal Community on Cesar Chavez Street, and I do deeply value that opportunity. The Eucharist to me is the closest thing to a meeting point between Christianity and Buddhism. It's about letting go. It's about being grateful. It's about laughing at yourself. I'm a piece of work, and it's in progress, and I don't know where it's going. But you know what? Lots of Christians are honest enough to say the same thing these days, and especially, I think, in the Episcopal Church, we embrace ambiguity a lot and make room for it. And we even talk about things like the emerging church, maybe even allowing for the kind of diversity that the church has had at some points in its history. Not most of its history, but at some points. You know, it's very complicated. and there are reasons, there are causes for the suffering that Christianity does to itself. Some of them are quite blatant, actually, because of the politics of the Roman Empire and of Europe. But, we're all in this together.
One of the things I enjoyed sharing with you as we spoke was that neither of us are strangers to the transcendental states and mystical states as well, and how that is also a part of it. And also just enjoying sharing being us with all of our problems and all of our humanity and allowing that to sort of just be and come together, that it's all part of that, and that's what I enjoyed sharing as well. But yeah, it's all in the parade.
I just want to echo that. I really appreciated you sharing your tender heart and
And just so you know, it's not so bad up here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If there are no other questions, is there something you gentlemen would like to maybe wrap up with or say in closing?
I would say that my spiritual life has been very important to me from an early age. And it's for me, it's been very many moments of awakening, kind of like, you know, the flower opening. One of the greatest things for me was being able to realize that being myself is part of that process as well. That change occurs, and you know, I like self-improvement, self-development, and all that. But at the same time, as I am now, and as I was, and as I will be, or not, is okay, and is part of that as well. And that's been probably the most liberating thing. You know, even when thinking about, well, what am I going to say when I'm up there, and just going, well, why don't you be yourself? Thinking, is that okay? I mean, really? Which one? But so for me, that's the greatest part of the process now. So, yeah. Another realization.
Hey, John. Can I tell something on John?
Sure.
Please do. I mean, I've only known you for, 4 years? But John and I have been in a practice community called Integral Transformative Practice, which is co-founded by Michael Murphy with George Leonard. And one of the things John said that has reverberated in my soul since he said it, to a community of probably 20 people, he said, if you knew how much I loved you, you'd be jumping for joy. And then he went on to say how, you know, we have these barriers to our bodhicitta, and to opening that, and to sharing that, and that was his practice. And it moved me, and I thought, wow, you know, I do feel that in his presence. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And I know he feels that for each and every one of you here. He shares you guys with me in that sense.
But he's still not gay. He's my pretend gay friend.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
I just want to commend two books to you, two of Pema Chodron's books that are, they're like reading scripture for me. In fact, one of them is on my Kindle, and when I finish it, I just start over again. And that's Start Where You Are. And then the second one is The Places That Scare You, an invitation to bodhisattva living. I love her.
Okay, well.
And one last thing is another thing that I just absolutely love about this place. When I saw the GBF dedication of merit, I just thought it was absolutely beautiful. Just beautiful.
Well, then I'll have to have you read it. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for today. Thank you for sharing your time. Okay, announcements. Jerry Jones.
Thank you. Thanks again. I'm on the program committee with Roy and Jim Stewart, Shantanu, and we're always looking for speakers or Dharma Duo, so if you're interested or want to be recruited to be a Dharma Duo, we'll be happy to talk to you. Next week, we have a real interesting panel coming. I don't know how many people, but the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And you're probably asking yourself, what do they have to do with spirituality? And I'll say, well, we're going to find out. And one of our, Cass Brayton was one of the originals, I believe, and even Baruch Golden was one of the really early ones. So I imagine some people might have, what are we bringing them to? But I think come with an open heart and open mind and see what the experience is.
That's great. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. I want to remind everyone that GBF has an account at the Community Thrift, which is on Valencia Street. We made about $400 in the last quarter from people donating things, so it's a great way to support the Sangha. They take donations every day between 9 and 5, but you should check their website before you bring stuff in, because there's a whole host of things they don't take that might not be seem logical, but that's the way it works. So I would hope everyone would continue to donate and support the Sangha. Thank you. What's the name again? Community Thrift. It's that on Valencia Street at 17. It's painted barrier shades.
No, mine is go to Community Thrift.
Yeah, just go to Community Thrift and it'll pop up.
Yeah, I just wanted to announce that on Mondays there's another sitting group at the LGBT Center that's been going on for about 10 years. A lot of us go and come. It's a sweet little group. It's a mixed group, LGBT, obviously, with the same format that we have here. It's a half-hour meditation. And only the talk is only a half hour instead of an hour, so it's between 5:30 and 6:30 every Monday evening at the Gay Center at Octavia and Market. So if anybody wants to start their week with another LGBT meditation group, it's a very sweet way to do it.
Thank you. I'm going to put more plug in for our Brother Sister Fellowship, the Gay Buddhist Sangha, which meets at 3 o'clock at Harper Street Zen Center. And our group, we do lots of different things, but there they tend to do, like, once a month they'll do a whole topic, and they'll bring in 4 speakers. So if you're looking for something maybe to deepen your practice a little more, it's always interesting to go and see who they're having coming and what they're talking about for the month.
Not exactly a Buddhist announcement, but I'm a member of a gay men's autobiographical / memoir writing group, and we're looking for a couple of new members, so if you want more details, check with me after.
Great. Okay.
I'm Kei Matsuda, I'm the host this morning, and welcome to all of you. Please enjoy refreshment during our social period, which lasts about half an hour. And we also have a sign-up sheet for newcomers, so if you're interested in staying in touch with this group, please leave your street and email address on the sign-up sheet. And some people go out and have lunch together around 12:30, so if you're interested in joining that group, look for them right inside or right outside the front door. And finally, I'll be coming around with a dinner ball, and that's the way that this group is supported. And suggested donations $5 to $8. But we certainly appreciate any generosity you are interested in showing us. So again, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Okay, let's stand for the dedication.
Yes.
By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness which is without sorrow, and may all live in equanimity without too much attachment or too much aversion, and live believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you, gentlemen, for today.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.